Miff Warhurst.
Weekdays on ABC Radio, online and on the ABC Listen app.
Now, let's talk books, shall we? You know, if you walk into any bookstore these days, you know, you take a look around the shelves, there'll be a few signs scattered around indicating the various genres: crime fiction, Australian fiction, history, politics, kids' books, you know, the lot. But have you ever seen a sign that says Amish romance? Or how about my favourite, well, soon to be my favourite, NASCAR passion? Well, they're all part of these new genres, micro-genres. And Beth Driscoll from Melbourne Uni has been taking part in a research called Genre World, and she knows all about it. Beth, hello.
Hello, good afternoon.
Good to have you with me. Thank you so much for joining us. Is there much demand for Amish romance?
Oh, yes, it's really booming as a category within publishing. There's television adaptations being made, lots of authors writing into the genre, whole sections of websites dedicated to it. It's a big trend.
How did it start?
I'm not exactly sure, although some authors have been working in this subgenre or microgenre for a while, but you can see the links between Amish romance and some of the subgenres that have always been popular in romance, so historical romance with its love of attention to detail. I also wonder if a little bit of what's happening is a reaction against the 50 Shades popularity that we've seen, more at that steamy end of romance, and this is
Is it not very steamy? Is that what you're suggesting?
Not very. It's more at the sweet end of the romance continuum.
So it's people, not just Amish people who are doing it, it's people who are using it as a sort of, I suppose, a conservative type of romance, is it?
I think that's right. It's a, you know, it's the kind of romance that gives emotional satisfaction to the reader, that's kind of creates a world with traditional values, but like all romance, it will have a happy ending that leaves the reader feeling uplifted, and perhaps that's what people are looking for in this age.
So it's a microgenre that becomes large. Tell us about the Genre Worlds project that you've been involved in.
Well, the Genre Worlds project is four of us researchers across a few different universities, and we started off investigating the three big genres of contemporary Australian publishing, so romance, fiction and crime, and we've done hundreds of interviews with writers and publishing professionals. But one of the things that we've found is each genre really is a world, and it contains all of these subgenres and microgenres where people are experimenting and putting different elements together in creative ways and reaching readers. And partly that's been influenced by the moves towards digital technology. So in a digital publishing age, microgenres work well with algorithms, and algorithms help readers find the books. So it's really about genre fiction being at the cutting edge of the publishing industry.
When you talk, are people looking for different books to read and searching certain genres, are they?
Well, I think there's a couple of ways it happens. We're all overwhelmed by the abundant cultural content we have these days. There's hundreds of thousands of books published each year to go with all of the movies and all of the television shows. And so that's where recommendation algorithms play such an important role. And we see those in Netflix when they suggest you might like this quirky British show with a female lead. And we also see it on, say, Amazon, where they have personalised recommendations for you based on what you've looked at or bought. I think the next step is really for us to take ownership as much as we can of those algorithms and come up with creative ways to search and move through platforms to find the content we're looking for.
I mean, is genres traditionally been part of marketing for publishers rather than what people want to read?
Well, it's that really interesting midpoint. In our research, we've found that authors, especially debut authors, they just write the book they want to write. And it's at that moment when the book hits the publisher that the publisher starts marketing and shaping it to meet what they see as reader expectations. And I think, you know, as a reader, you know what you're going to get out of a crime book, and you'll get an exciting mystery and a detective and some kind of resolution at the end. And so the job of the publisher is to put the right kind of book cover on that book and put it in places where the readers who are looking for that kind of book can find it. So it really is a kind of a continuum between what authors and readers are doing and then how publishers help bring them together.
We have people getting on and writing books and just putting them out there. And can you create your own genre and then it work for you?
Yeah, it's always a really interesting thing with genre fiction, how original you can be and then how much you need to align what you're doing with market trends. So you could create your own genre and then kind of build publicity for it, self-publish into it. That's something that my research partner Claire Squires and I have done with a comic erotic thriller we wrote set at a book fair. There's not a lot else happening in that particular niche at the moment, but, you know, we'll see see what we can make happen.
Yeah, let's just wind back a bit here because this is worth some discussion. So you, as part of this program, you've written your own novel, or small novel, and created your own genre per se.
Yeah, yeah, practice-led research, we call it in the academy. It was actually a really good way to take all of our impressions of the book industry and turn it into something a bit creative and then see what it's like to be a self-published author, an author who doesn't use a traditional publisher and tries to put their book out themselves into places like Amazon and maybe even print on demand, see if we can get it into bookshops. But, yeah, so as part of doing that, we had to come up with our own tags for it, and we used some industry tags, the BISAC code, so we had to go through and choose which one of those apply. And BISAC codes are fascinating to me because it's publisher language, so it's not the genre categories that readers would use, like fantasy and romance. It's much more specific than that. So they have one called Fiction Women's, which is pretty interesting. Yeah, so we chose a few of those BISAC codes and then we put it up on Wattpad, which is a digital publishing site where you can create your own tags. And we had a bit of fun with that, including a hashtag autoethnography and a hashtag epistemology. And, you know, we don't have a lot of competition in those subcategories.
So the novel that, how many pages or how many words was the novel that you wrote?
15,000 words.
So it's a reasonable effort, even for an academic
you.
Like it's yourself, Beth.
A lean, taut thriller.
Yes. Yeah. And what's it about?
Well, it follows someone from Melbourne who turns up at the Frankfurt Book Fair. She's been burned by the world of books, but she gets drawn in against her will to help family friends. One of the things we noticed about the Frankfurt Book Fair is it's a real stage for a lot of larger social issues. And, for example, the year that I was there observing, there was a bit of political violence even between some far-right publishers and some ultra-left-wing publishers who'd both been given stands in the same area. And some book fairs have actually banned the far-right publishers from attending, but the Frankfurt Book Fair has decided not to go down that route. So there's a kind of a political thriller that plays out in the novel that reflects some of those observations we made of the real-life book fair. We also noticed a lot of parties at the book fair, so there are parties in the novel too.
Do things get steamy in your book?
Yeah, they do. Yeah. at regular intervals.
It's very steamy?
Yeah, I'd say so. It's definitely the steamy end, not the sweet end of the romance.
I'm talking to Beth Driscoll from Melbourne University about microgenres in publishing. I suppose people listening now and have always wanted to publish a book and think, you know, I've always had a book in me. Things opening up online and with these microgenres making it easier for people to do.
Yeah, it's never been easier to get published. The corollary of that is that it's never been harder to get noticed. And that's where digital publishing kind of both creates the problem and offers its own solutions. So it's easy to upload a book to one of these platforms, Kindle Direct Publishing or Wattpad, for example. Wattpad, you do it chapter by chapter and get reader feedback as you go. But then you need to get people to notice your book, and tags can help because they can put you into buckets with other similar books so that readers who like those books can hopefully find yours. The more niche your category, the more likely you are to hit a reader who's looking for just the kind of thing that you're writing.
And how would you work out whether there are people out there or not? I suppose if you're going sort of weird with your book, how many people have looked at your online, your digital book?
I think it's about 900, so slightly more than, you know, my own family and friends. not quite at bestseller level, not at the millions of hits yet, but, you know, it's a niche. Hopefully we can springboard from this onto something a bit more mainstream later.
Are there any examples of the sort of microgenres starting small and then just becoming mainstream genres?
Yeah, well, there's a good Australian example, which is the RURO trend, rural romance.
Oh.
Which kind of started a fair while ago now, kind of the early 2000s, and these were romance novels set on Australian farms, and they often featured women who, you know, were very strong and capable and often running the farms themselves. And there was, you know, a few books in that genre, and then they did really well, and Australian publishers started actively commissioning into that genre, so there were more and more of them. And they became really recognisable as a brand because they'd often have a woman on the front wearing an Akubra hat. So, yeah, so they kind of developed a bit of an identity. And I don't think there's quite as many of them now, so some of those writers have moved into other directions. So, it, you know, there's a life cycle to these micro-genres and sub-genres.
What are the ones like, what's the billionaires and babies? What's that?
Pretty much what it says on the tin. So the, the hero of these novels will be a billionaire and he'll love babies or have be looking after babies. So I guess there the appeal is the mix of extreme wealth but also kind of tender paternal side of the hero.
Does the billionaire find a baby somewhere or?
Yeah, they might.
They just.
Yep. They can acquire the baby in a number of different ways. But, you know, the crucial thing is that it's there to activate that softer side of the hero. And, you know, billionaires need soft sides.
When you're looking to self-publish, what did you learn and what could you share with people who want to self-publish a book?
I think it's really fun thing to do. I liked co-authoring because it gives it a bit of a sense of community. So I would advise people to get on social media and find other writers and other people who are involved in the publishing industry. There's a very generous community that will share knowledge and take away some of the loneliness of writing. But I think it's the kind of thing where you can just have a go. Some of the authors we've talked to, you know, not everyone will make it on self-publishing, but those who do, it's, you know, a really great thing and it can be very gratifying to find all of those readers. I guess the one bit of advice I would have is it's surprisingly time-consuming, all of the entrepreneurial side of setting up as a self-publisher. So, I don't know, even typesetting a book, that takes a bit of effort and work and trying to design a cover. You can outsource it to other people. I tried to do it myself and it's a, you know, it's a charmingly amateurish design that I've ended up with.
Well, is there a chance that your small novel will end up as a Netflix series, do you think?
Oh, yeah. If there are any producers listening, the book's called The Frankfurt Kabuff, yeah. And it'd make a great Netflix series.
Oh, well, you never know. Stranger things have happened, Beth.
Thanks for the plug.
Oh, look, this is good. I'm sure people will be searching for it now, and I think you'll sort of give inspiration to people because so many people I talk to all the time love to write and always think that they've got something in there. They don't know where to start. And if you write something and 10 people read it rather than no people, at least you're getting somewhere, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. And Wattpad's nice because you can just put up one chapter and then people can tell you what they like or enjoyed. And then that can give you encouragement to write the second chapter and so on.
Fascinating stuff. Beth, thank you so much for chatting to me today. Really good to talk to you.
My pleasure. Thanks, Tim.
Mick Warhurst.
Weekdays on ABC Radio, online and on the ABC Listen app.